What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Meyrin Podcast. Today, my guest is Max Moffat. Max is a pro skier from Canada. He's been on the slopestyle and big air national team for over 5 years now. He's one of the top competitors in the skiing world right now, and it was really cool to see him have his best year last year. He got 2 World Cup podiums, his first X Games medal, and participated in the Beijing Olympics. In this episode, we talked about a bunch of stuff ranging from the difference between big air and slopestyle competitions, going to X Games and earning his first medal ever, going to the Beijing Olympics to participate in both big air and slopestyle, participating in the slush games, signing with Armada, and a bunch of other stuff. Little side note, we recorded this episode before Max signed with Red Bull, so that subject isn't discussed in the episode. Big shout out to the sponsors, Planks Clothing, Axis Board Shop, and Dick Ann's Restaurants. Also, big shout out to the patrons on Patreon, Olden Baldassi, Sam Chef, Ryan Bruninghouse, Laurent-Olivier Martin, Raph Diaz, and Will Cameron. Let's go! Max Moffat, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, boy. Thanks for having me, dog. Appreciate it.
Hey, well, thanks for coming on. I'm stoked to have an upcoming legend in the place.
Oh, big words, man. But
yeah, well, you've been killing it this season and, well, in the past couple of years.
Thanks a lot.
It's, I feel like everyone who was watching you for the past couple of years knew that you were going to blow up at some point, and we were just all waiting, and then you got your, I feel like you got your big break last season.
Yeah, last year was pretty insane. It kind of just, everything seemed to fall into place, which I was also waiting on.
Yeah. For doing the episode, I looked back at like your FIS profile and the points like that, and it's crazy sometimes with a younger generation like yours where there's so much competition. Mm-hmm. Like I just did an episode with Megan Oldham.
Yeah.
And I was looking back at her first season, and her first season, like 5 years ago in the World Cup, she won the Crystal Globe.
Yeah, dude.
And then there's like a way up from then.
Yeah.
And I feel like there might be something like that for you where people have known about you. You've had some good results on the World Cup. And then, but like that X Games medal took a while. Like when I say your big break, what I have in mind is the X Games medal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. I was maybe just fell asleep for a bit or something. Nah, yeah, just I don't know, last year just sort of worked out. I had like a really good start to the season in Europe, like just really fun training. Didn't really feel like training. It was just like I had a big Euro trip with my homies, like a few months. We did like Saspe, Intertux, and Stelvio, and it was all like we just got really good weather and really good setups, and I felt like it sort of just set me up for success in the season. I just learned, I learned like 20 new tricks that I've been wanting to do for years, and then all of a sudden I was just, I don't know, trying them and landing them, and it was sort of just everything was clicking, and then I used all those tricks in contests that I'd never really done before.
That's dope.
So yeah, it all sort of clicked, and that was like a good start.
There's many things that you say in there that are interesting. Like there's the Team Canada side where it seems like you and the other teammates are really a bunch of like really tight-knit friends.
For sure. Yeah.
Then the Olympic year where it seems like a lot of people don't necessarily have their best year on an Olympic year because there might be pressure and fatigue and, you know,
some stress.
Stress, a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
But then you seem like you had your best year ever at that point.
How did you
manage that, or how was that year for you that might be stressful for others?
For sure. I was talking about this the other day too. Like I got pretty lucky early on in the season with some good results, like that I wasn't really expecting. I didn't really have a whole lot of expectation. And honestly, like throughout the last few years, I was going through some, like, you know, some anxiety about what I wanted to do. And I don't know, I feel like I should be open about this. And I was putting a lot of pressure on myself, and I went into last season sort of with like a bit of a newer outlook. I was like, I'm just going to try and take it contest by contest and like really enjoy the process of it. And if I go to the Olympics or not, like at least I can just say that I had fun doing it, you know, because I, at the end of the day, like skiing is for me the best thing ever. And
yeah,
I love it to death. So I was trying to just like enjoy it as much as possible throughout the process to get there. And at the end of the day, like hold my head up high, regardless of the outcome. So I went into the season and just like had a really good start in Europe. Like I just said, the first few training camps, I just learned a lot and I felt really good on my skis. I don't know. I just like, I had a good summer of being active and being trying to like eat healthy and, you know, be just kind of a good
mental space.
Yeah, good mental space. And I like felt really good mentally going into the season. And then in Stubai, or actually before Stubai, like the first World Cup, which was Kerr, the big air. I don't really consider myself a really good big air skier, but I ended up doing pretty well there. I came fifth. And that was just like, it seemed like some hard work had paid off then, you know, like
yep.
First World Cup, like there was definitely some stress and it was a scaffolding big air. It was pretty sketchy. And I just happened to have a good event, like did well, top five. It was so fun too, like with all my homies. And I sort of just rode that, like that was a really good start for, you know, like a result to kind of put myself in a good position. And then from there, I went straight to Stubai, which is the slopestyle World Cup, and I podiumed. It was like a really big podium for me. Like I came second and felt like I just had this unbelievable week of skiing. And those were the first two of the year. And that really like, it didn't solidify my spot, you know, at all, but.
Well, it surely helps.
Surely helped. And like, it almost took a lot of pressure off the next upcoming, whatever, five or six contests leading up to the Olympics. Cause it felt like, damn, I have two good results. And I had one from last year that will count, another fifth place. So I was sort of, and it's like how it works is it's your sum of three contests. Like, so I was sitting at two fifths and a second, so a 12, like 12 points, and you want lower the better. I just kind of rode that. And every contest after that, I obviously felt pressure, but it was so nice to already have some, you know, some results.
Yeah. You're not coming in. There's some US guys. I don't know if it's still the case, but there's some US guys back in the days, I remember, that like clinched their spot a week before the Olympics.
Exactly.
Which must be like, as you were saying, like, there can be so much anxiety caused from that.
So much.
For nothing, really, where like it's not necessary to have it that tight schedule-wise.
Yeah, exactly.
And surely it must help when you're like, Stubai is, what, 4 months in advance? So you kind of have...
It was quite a bit of time.
You can sleep well at night a bit.
Yeah, I know. And honestly, I think that helped me so much. It was like, I just got lucky. Like I had results early. And then
I like to say you create your luck. Like
Like so some hard work for sure went into it, but it was just a bit of a stress-free sort of ride into it.
And plus you weren't part of the last one that you could have been part of. Like you were at a level where you could have been part of Pyeongchang, but you didn't make the team, right?
Yeah, I was like, I would have been the alternate. Like I was one spot out.
And the team back then was Teal, Evan, Belmar,
and ABM.
And ABM.
Yeah.
And like ABM podiumed.
Yeah, ABM podiumed. And there was like a dream team. You know, those guys are.
Yeah. It's so hard to make a place in there. Like,
yeah, exactly. Like, and if you're skiing on a Canadian team, US team, Norwegian team, Swiss team, you know, like the top guys on those teams, like, it's pretty.
Were you looking for a Jamaican uncle at that point?
Looking like for some like old ancestors to hit me up to, you know, ride for a different country quick. No, I was Canadian blood. I can't escape it.
Yeah. How was it? Maybe we can touch on that just for a bit. The 2018 experience. Yeah. Because you got on the World Cup circuit in 2017, so you were still kind of a new guy to the game at that point.
Yeah.
But I guess with your ambitions, like I'm sure you wanted to be there. And how was that process? Like, were you bummed?
No, not at all. Honestly, I was sort of just like, I felt like a young kid just in my place, and still felt like I had a lot to prove before I had any of those opportunities. You know what I mean? Like I remember watching it late at night, you know, and watching Teal and Evan and all those boys kill it. And yeah, for sure, it would have been sick to be there, but I didn't feel like I had the results then to really back my, like, if I would have gone, it would have been a bit strange, I think, because I hadn't proved myself to be in that spotlight yet. And those four people had proven themselves time and time again, you know, that made the Canadian team for that 2018 Olympics. Yeah. It was cool for me to even be the alternate then, you know, like it was like in my mind, like, damn, I was, you know, if I had maybe had some other results, it would have been cool to be there, but it wasn't like I was super bummed about it for sure.
Yeah. And now it's time for a first sponsor break. If you listen to this podcast, you know, Access Board Shop is the dopest shop in skiing. They support athletes, movies, events, and a bunch of other stuff related to skiing and snowboarding. I've been to their shop recently, and they're ready for ski season. They've received all the new skis, boots, outerwear, and every other thing you'll need for this season. So if you're in Quebec, go check out Access Boutique in Saint-Sauveur, or you can check them out online at accessboutique.ca. Support companies that support skiing. Support Access Board Shop. Is the alternate like an official title? Like, is it like if someone blows his knee, then they fly you out? Something like that?
I honestly, maybe alternate is not even the right word. It was like I was shortlisted or something. So yeah, if something went down before they went over, you know, maybe I would get a call, but it wasn't even like, it was like a shortlist, like / long shot. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It was not really a
because alter, yeah, because alternate is, I think, actually a term for X Games, let's say.
Yeah, a lot of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't, like, they didn't fly me over or anything, but it was more like if something had happened, you know, in the weeks coming up, like if someone got hurt in the last qualifier or something, you know, they might have pulled me up. But yeah.
That's how she goes.
That's how she goes.
You talked about the role you were on this season. Starting off in with Big Air Core. Is that how you say it? Core?
Yeah, it's like C-H-U-R. I don't know. Yeah. I've heard a lot of different ways. Like core or...
But I remember watching that, the live stream last season. It seemed like a really dope comp.
Dude, like, yeah.
It was, the whole town there.
It was insane. Yeah, it was... that. That's the event I'm going to like in the next week or so. I'm actually flying out to Europe tomorrow to go ski a bit and then go to that event. But yeah, like it's sort of like a big music festival in this small little city in Switzerland. And they have like a bunch of headline big German rappers that are super really big over there. And I don't know a lot of their names, but it was like sort of like the music festival was the big ticket attraction for all the people that would come. And then the Big Air was just like, who doesn't want to watch this as well, you know? It was like the big stage here and then the Big Air literally right beside. So yeah, people are definitely entertained. And then behind it was like party tents and food. It was like a huge carnival, just mayhem pretty much. And the event was just set up really well. Like the jump, I wouldn't say it was the best, but they did some work on it to make it okay. And
it progressed a lot though. Like it progressed a lot, the scaffoldings, it seems, because I remember like 10 years ago, people were doing dub 10s and it seemed like the limit. And now like,
yeah,
you guys are doing the trick that you would almost do at X Games. Like it seems pretty similar.
Yeah, I feel like people have just gotten really good at doing big tricks on smaller jumps. Like it's crazy. I mean, and
the jump is not necessarily that much bigger.
No. Oh, like comparative to X Games, it's small.
No, I mean like compared to other scaffoldings maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, I would say near the same, maybe just a bit like more pop or like a little better build or something like that. Yeah, but I remember the first few days of that big air was like people were bummed. Like it was a sketchy setup. And it was like a crazy big step down. And then they did a bunch of work literally the day before qualifiers to like build up the landing so it wasn't as much of a step down. And then the transition wasn't as like quick. It was like a little better. I really liked it. It was super fun. A lot of people were like, I bet a lot of people up there listening to this was like, Max, you're an idiot. Like,
but, yeah. What did people have against the jump?
I don't know, dude. Like, people have their way to complain about it. I don't know. Like, a lot of people just weren't down with it.
Okay.
With, you know, it was some wind, too, that was kind of getting to it. Like, especially for heat, too. Like, heat one was in the morning, and it was sunny, beautiful, no wind. And that's what one I was in. So maybe I just have a different experience. Yeah. And I was in the start. So, like, no wind, slushy landing, perfect takeoff. You know, and then by heat two, it was like kind of getting a bit darker. So like maybe dusk. So it was like icier, probably a lot windier, like sketchy speed. So I think people were not as down. Like a few people dropped out before they even competed. So, but that happens. Like it's just unfortunate.
There's a lot of stories from slope style or bigger competitions being just canceled due to bad conditions. So I guess that you're used to that or not used, but you got to deal with that.
Yeah. You always got to deal with it. It's no one's fault. And everyone always tries to blame the organizers and it's like, yeah, what can you do to Mother Nature? Like just do what you got to do. And if you're riding in less than ideal, you know, conditions, everyone's riding the same conditions, you know, so unless you're in two different heats and it's unfortunate, but yeah.
Yeah. And what was your trick? Was it the dub bios slash?
Yeah.
Well, how do you call the ones you do? Do you think of them as misties or bios?
Like a dub bio 16. Yeah. That's the trick. I did dub bio 16 Japan. Sometimes I like mork them. It's honestly like a bit of a like,
tell me what does morking means?
Like in between cork and misty, so like you're kind of just on this rotation that doesn't really make a lot of sense, and it's sort of like if you're really bad at taking off, doing a double cork instead of like popping your hip up and really going backwards, it's sort of like you're throwing almost forwards but sideways,
right?
Like, you know, maybe if you've never done a cork seven and you try one, that would be what it looks like.
Kind of to the side.
Yeah, to the side. You usually land backseat and whatever.
Yeah, those dub bios are really good.
Thank you, dude. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Like we don't see much dub bios. There was a ABM always had some in his runs.
Yeah.
Vinny Gagne in Big Air, but it's a why don't you think we see that much dub bios?
Dude,
is it a harder like angle to spin?
Growing up, not doing it a lot. Like I didn't do it a lot until a few years ago. And I remember seeing Burke Rude doing like dub bio 14 mutes like a while ago and being like, that is the most insane trick ever. I will never be able to do that. Like I can't even fathom it in my head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then just like started doing bio sevens for fun, like on jumps and getting more comfortable with them. And then I like learned a dub bio 10 in the Yukon. And I remember being like, oh damn, maybe like I could do some stuff like this. It was just a slow progression. And then I started doing them and like, it's just a trick that not a lot of people like go to. It's just uncomfortable for some people, like throwing forward off a jump. It's, you know, it's like going against the way the jump works, you know, you're like going
right
backwards and then forwards, and like it's a lot easier to set like a cork rotation.
Back in the days, I remember seeing the first switch dub misties
yeah
and thinking those looked like the scariest trick I could ever think of.
So scary. Yeah.
But then some people caught on to it a bit. Like, it's not that popular, but people do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But dub bios are still not popular. It seems that maybe that's the scary one.
Yeah, they're getting more popular. But like Burke, I feel like really made it into his own, like doing dub bio 18s. Like, I remember in the Olympic test event in China, like 2 years before this Olympics in like 2019, we went to China to do that event. And Burke was doing dub bio 14s both ways. And it was like the most mind blowing thing to me. I was just like, yeah. you're
both
like
ways.
Both ways is psycho. Like, his talent level is just ridiculous. And then he did a dub bio 18, just like dumped one, never been done. Like, no one's ever tried it for sure. It was like, and I was right there, I watched in person, and I remember being like, that is like,
and like super tweaked mute. He has like some of the best mutes,
held the whole time, like so sick, landed so good, and just came down to the bottom, and I was at the bottom, and I was with Christian Neumendahl, and I was just looking at him like, you're a god. Like, what? You know those moments where you just don't have any really words, you're just like, that is, it's fucked. Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's time for another sponsor break. I'm stoked to have Dickens Restaurants as a sponsor once again this season. I've been a lifetime fan, so I'm always happy to share the good word. Dickens is a family-owned fast food restaurant chain with 12 locations in the Montreal region. They've been famous since 1954 for their great food, especially their flat hamburgers and their spicy sauce. Talking about their sauce, it's been available since last year in many Metro grocery stores all over Quebec. Dickens is my number one fast food spot, so if you come by Montreal, you gotta check it out. Support companies that support skiing. Support Dickens Restaurants. Well, I guess that's the times where you've had more success in your career up to now in slopestyle versus big air. That might be times where you're like, yeah, I'm going to stick to slopestyle.
For sure. Yeah. But I also like, yeah, I've always been more like slopestyle suited my skiing, the way I like look at things. You know, the creativity aspect is, like, you can show your skiing so much more, I think, than big air. But I also think, like, in the past few years, I've tried to, like make a point of trying to, like, get better at big air, just because it's such a more difficult thing in my head. Like, for me especially, like, I'm just not, like, I have tricks, but not big air tricks necessarily. And it was, like, a goal of mine. Yeah.
It might also help your slopestyle game.
For sure.
If, like, it works on your jump, and then that necessarily the tricks you do there can apply also to your slope runs.
Exactly. And that's what was happening, you know, like the dub bio 16, I learned early season last year. I took it to, you know, that was like my last trick in my X Games run. So that was like, you know, a big like deal for me for sure.
And I think that's definitely something that made your success, I think, or that might have got you that result, is that you're one of the best rail skiers in the world. Like, I think, no, but you know what I mean, like, at your level everyone is super good, but like, we see the clips you post on Instagram, and as you said, Burke is godlike. I think people would say like what you're posting is godlike on the rails, like you but then if you add on some jumps to that, then it's hard to beat.
For sure. Yeah. And still, you know, trying to have the new fresh flavor that, you know, that slopes down needs, like the just that little bit of, you know, uniqueness is what I think. Yeah,
you're one of the most fun guys I see doing rails. Like, you have that ultra tech skills that the new generation have, but plus with that flavor. Yeah. It's that run in at X Games this year, we can jump into that. That's one of my favorite runs I think I've ever seen. That was like, it's hard to say perfection because every slope course is different, so then it varies, but
yeah,
that run was so dope.
Yeah, thank like
you had the misty nine to start off, that was like super hungry, like aggressive but super steezy. Then a couple tech rail tricks, like switch to back three swap or switch to back four, something like that. But, you know, tech tricks on the rails, and then on the jumps, switch right dub 12, nose, Like the big poke nose, which nose grab is a trick, is a grab we rarely see.
Yeah.
Then left dub 14, super steezy, and then right dub bio 16, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, Hail Mary, dude.
Was that a Hail Mary?
No, I guess not. I don't know. I've done it a few times in practice, but I've never really linked the full rail line, like the eight, like the hardest one I wanted to do with the jumps like that well. So it was definitely, that's why you can see me at the bottom. I'm like freaking out. Like I've never freaked out like that at a bottom of slope, like at the bottom of a slope course. Like that, it was just, that was the craziest feeling ever, dude. Cause I wanted to do that rail line super bad, but sort of, there would always be one thing that wasn't like perfect about it or something. And then my jump line would be like not as good or something. And then it was last run. And I don't know what I was sitting in. I had some good runs up till then. There was like four runs that you got in that X Games. And I was sitting in a good spot, but I really just like wanted to land this full top to bottom. And it was one of those things where like you envision it and then I landed. And it was like exactly how I wanted to do it. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing that I would have changed, which is rare in a slopestyle. You always have something that you're like, oh, that could have been better. Like, oh, that was like whatever, you know, like I didn't grab that super well. And that run, it was just for me, like best run I've ever done. Like it was just kind of put it all on the line. So right at the bottom. Yeah.
At that point on the fourth run, you were third.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you might've had that like, okay, I'm on the podium, kind of. Let's push it.
Yeah.
Kind of that good energy.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I remember being at the top, like a bit stressed, obviously, but like just trying to breathe. And then before I dropped in, I like kind of smiled, which is like, it was rare for me. Usually I'm just like, go. And I like tried to take an extra second before I dropped to be like, all right, I'm just happy to be here. You know what I mean? Like this is a sick opportunity to just like be with all these people. Be in this contest with like something I've grown up watching, you know, and like be at this level. And I kind of just thought about that right before I dropped in. I think it was like a good like swing thought, if that makes sense. Like, you know, when you're golfing and you want to think about something good before you hit, you know, it was like a good pre-run thought. And then, just all worked out.
I think that's definitely a good thing to do. Because I did an episode with Henrik recently, and he said the same exact thing for his X Games medal. His X Games, sorry, the Olympic medal. He was like you, close to the podium before his last run.
Yeah.
He knew that if he landed his nose butt triple well, it would put him on the podium most likely.
Yeah.
So he was like in a confident place, in a positive place, and he was like telling me that he was just grateful to be there, that it was like, he remember being super happy at that point and being like, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I guess it's like a positive outlook that you have that influences that.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of like calm your body down with those thoughts, you know, like when you're, it's like you think positively and stuff like positive stuff will happen, you know, and it's sort of like corny or whatever to say, but it works so much in competing. Like the mental side of it is just like so far beyond. I think that
it loosens you to not overthink your run. Cause if you were in third at that point, it means that you landed a great run. Mm-hmm. So you've landed it. It's not as if like you whiffed all your run and then you're stressed or whatever.
Yeah.
You've landed a run, you know, you've done it. It's just like, okay, well I'm going to do my, like have fun and try to up it.
Exactly. And I think that's the like the place you want to be as well. Like who knows, I probably wouldn't have had that same thought if I'd just bailed on all of my runs until then, you know, probably would have been sweating a little more.
But overthinking about whatever you whiffed, being like, okay, now I don't want to whiff it. And then you're like maybe overthinking stuff.
But I test it. I like, it makes sense that Henrik's doing that, you know, he's the Don, like, you know, I talk about Burke Rude being the god, which, you know, he is, but Henrik is really like the end all be all, like the, I don't know. It's hard to even describe him. You know what I mean? Like
he's the goat.
He's the goat. Yeah.
Like he's the goat.
Yeah. It's crazy to even like surround yourself with him. Sometimes I'm still like, damn, Henrik, you're the best, you know. And not even,
how is it, tell us, for us mortals that don't have that chance, how is it?
Oh, dude,
skiing with him, or like, you know, shredding with him.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. It's I feel like Henrik always had like his, you know, perception of the public as being like this happy, awesome, you know, dude that just like loves skiing so much, and it couldn't be more true. You know what I mean? Like when you're with him, it's insane how he's done it for so many years and how like experienced he is, like how just his ski IQ is so high. That's how I describe him. Like he just knows everything. And I think that's what plays into his like strengths as well. His like knowledge of all the past and present of like everything just makes him into this like superhuman. And I think that's like the coolest part of being around him for me is like, I don't know, I saw him in New Zealand and we were out after Jossie's event and just like had a big chat with not just him, but like, you know, it was like Wacko and Bo and Hot Laps and Henrik and I were, I think we were just standing outside of Domino's and like Henrik was just dropping facts. You know what I mean? Like it was just, we were just all listening to Henrik. Like, you know what I mean? Like all the boys knowing exactly our place being like, damn, Henrik, like respect. it was sick. It was sick to hear just like his, I don't know, just where he's at.
And now it's time for another sponsor break. The season is here and Planks Clothing is there for you. Planks is a movement of humans creating change through skiing. Skiing is a mind-altering experience. The mountains bring together a community of obsessive riders, roamers, and revelers. Their vision is to build this global community all bound by shared vibes and hooked on riding. Drop 1 and 2 of their 22-23 collection is now online at planksclothing.com. This collection celebrates Manchester, Planks' second home. Its people, and its influence on the gear they make. Proper good gear that'll stand up on the harshest mountain conditions and everything else the universe throws at you. Check them out at planksclothing.com. Support companies that support skiing. Support Planks Clothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's you're right about the perception people have. What I think people might miss sometimes is that, yes, he's super passionate and loves skiing and all of that, but what adds to it regarding his success is that he's super smart and strategic about skiing and but not just skiing, the competition style and all of that. Like he doesn't just do a trick in competition because he likes it. It's all, there's also a play of what the other people are going to do, what's the format. Like he's playing chess mixed in with his super talent. So then that's what makes him.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like the, you know, the combination, which is so rare, of the hard work, like the crazy work ethic, the insane talent, and the like humbleness that he has is just like you it's in each sport. I feel like there's a select few that like have that, you know what I mean? Like the people that, you know, are not just incredibly athletically talented, they're, you know, as I said, like the ski IQ and what you say, like I couldn't agree more. It's just like he knows what to do and knows how to like make it his own still, which is so important.
I want to touch on something with Henrik, but let's get back to the X Games for a bit.
Oh yeah,
take me through how you how the X Games was, maybe in the light of being just before the Olympics with COVID and all of that, but also how do you put together that run and that course? Because let's say that first rail where you do a Misty 9, like that doesn't look like a rail that's asking for that.
Nah. I could go on forever, honestly, but...
Well, go ahead.
I'll start with like before even going to X Games, it was obviously COVID times, so super stressful in the way that like it was the week before leaving to the Olympics. And by then, like I knew really, like I knew I was going, but it hadn't been official, you know, like I knew I had a spot, just with team rankings and stuff. Like I was pretty locked in, but it hadn't been like official. I hadn't gotten the call being like, yeah, you're in, but I knew it, you know? Mm-hmm. And the Canadian team was pretty like, I'm not hating on it at all, but they were pretty against us going to X Games, like, which is super fair. And I totally understand their point. They just, you know, they put a lot of money into us.
Yeah. And they don't care about X Games. They care about the Olympics.
Yeah. Which is totally fair. It's what their funding comes from. And like, it's what the whole program is based around. And I wouldn't say they don't care about X Games. I think it's like a huge thing for them as well. And it also creates funding opportunities, but
there's a clear number one priority.
Exactly. And it's all good. Like, it makes sense. And, you know, the week leading up, you know, getting sick at X Games from COVID or getting hurt is a huge risk going into the Olympics. Like, and it always is that way on every Olympic year. The X Games is right before, and everyone is sort of like in this weird space where, like, do I go? Do I don't go? Do I try hard? Do I don't? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for me, any opportunity to go to the X Games, I'm going to try my hardest. Like, there's no doubt. I'm going to take that opportunity when I can, because you don't know how many you're going to have in your life. You know, with what can happen, I'm going to go regardless. So I went, and I was, you know, told not to go, but a lot of my teammates went anyway. So it's like, we're just going to do it. And I've never been that COVID strict in my life. Like, it was, I usually am not a super huge, like, I'm not very, you know, I don't care too much about risk usually. But at that time, I was scared of getting sick. Like, if I tested positive, I wasn't going to the Olympics, and I wasn't going to, you know what I mean? And which is like a huge deal. But it was a risk I thought about a lot and was willing to take. And I think that's what everyone sort of was at that time. So I flew to Aspen, rented my own car, rented my own place, ordered groceries online, you know, and when they got there, I was like wiping them down, you know, with like, I was that guy, you know what I mean? And I did not want to be that guy, but I was. And I skied with a mask. Like, there's footage of me always with a mask.
Yeah, all of Team Canada was like repping the N95. Yeah, Megan told me the same thing, that you were kind of, you were incited not to go. So then they were like, you better not get sick.
Yeah, and that was... yeah, just a crazy time. Like, being X Games is like the most social event, and it's the pinnacle of our sport. You know, it's like you want to go hang out with people and meet people and go, you know, to these cool spots. But at that time, it was so weird. I was literally going home, skiing in a mask, like dapping everyone up with my elbow, you know, and going home and being alone like that. It was a very weird time. But anyways,
but that's what, for like a span of 5 days, let's say, something like that.
Yeah. 5 or 6 days. I think I was there, maybe 7. So yeah, it was strange. It was very like solitary. I was, you know, by myself a lot, but at least when you're skiing, you can like say hi to homies and still get into a session. Like, you're outside. There's no like athlete tent you can go into. But yeah, the whole week was perfect weather. The course was like probably my favorite slope course ever, you know? So it all sort of rolled into place, and I was already feeling like I had some good results that year.
What made it your favorite slope course?
Oh, I love like three jumps. I don't know. I love three jumps, and I don't, it's not like I'm hating on like shark fins or any other creative stuff. I think that's like as well, really, really fun. But those three jumps, I was just super down with, like, they all just flowed super well. And the rail setup at the start, I was like having trouble. And then I started doing that like misty hand plant, and I was just doing like fives over it.
Mm.
And then like rainbows are always my favorite rails, especially in contest. And it was like this teardrop rainbow rail to down.
Yeah. That's nice. It's rare that you see those.
Yeah. And it was like a perfect, like, I was doing like back three swap, back four. And it was like, they're one of those rails is at Mount St. Louis when I was growing up.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Dude, I'll have to post that on Instagram. You have a a shot, a trick on that rail that back three swap, back switch up Pretz 2. Is that
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I rewatched it stalking you before the episode and I was like, holy shit, that shot is so sick.
Thanks. Yeah, yeah. It's like my favorite rail, that one. The teardrop at Mount St. Louis is sick. Everything at X Games was going well. And I yeah, I just felt good about my skiing. I kind of already talked about it before. I like mm-hmm. just seemed like, and I was also doing knucklehook, which was really sick. So I would like do practice, and then there was like knucklehook practice and big air practice, and I was an alternate for big air. So I was actually skiing quite a lot throughout the day, which was sick. Like I would get to ski slope practice, go home for a bit, have a nap, like, and then go back at night and ski big air practice. And at that time, it was like the same time as knucklehook. So it was just like six sessions the whole week with really sick people. And like Evan was there, Eddie was there, Megan was there, Teal was there, like all my team, but I wasn't staying with them, which is so weird because I'm always staying with them. I was just solo. Yeah, slopes that like that day was still the most insane day ever. I had, you know, like podiumed at in.
Did you have kind of a good feeling going into it at the beginning of the day? Was it like, okay,
really
it's going to be a good day?
Yeah, I woke up, looked outside, bluebird. Like, it was almost like when you're a kid on Christmas morning, and you get up out of bed and you're like, like running around dancing, you know? Like, I was.
When you're a kid and you wake up on Christmas Day, you know it's going to be a good day.
Exactly. Like, your smile ear to ear, like, as soon as you wake up, it's like going to bed that night. You want the night to be over. You know what I mean? You just want morning so bad. Like you want to fall asleep so bad because you know when you wake up, it's like instantly sick.
Yeah.
And that's literally how it was. Like it was insane. And I put on like my base layers and I was doing a warm up in my little apartment. Had like a little yoga mat and a roller. And I was like getting all geared up, listening to like some MF Doom or something probably. And I called my parents just to say what up and, you know, cause obviously I want them to be there, but they weren't allowed. So it's like sick to talk to them. And then, yeah, I had the most insane day skiing I think I've ever had, like did that run that I was just super proud of. And, you know, podiuming was like something I didn't expect and something I wanted really bad, but I had a good feeling about it. And it was just the funniest thing. Like I remember that run and like just sitting at the bottom waiting for people to come being like, damn, I want everyone to land super bad, but I'm in second right now. And how insane would it be to podium, you know? So you're like, you're wanting everyone to land their best stuff, but you're not wanting them to beat you, you know? And it sounds like selfish, but.
No, but it's all good. It would be, I think it would be, it wouldn't be honest for anyone to say the opposite. Like you're like, oh, you can have third place for today, but I'm going to keep my second if I can.
Exactly. Yeah. And I remember landing that run and like falling to the ground being like, I cannot believe that happened. Like landing the last trick. And as I was saying before, just the most stoked I've ever been after landing a run. It was like a feeling that doesn't happen often. You know what I mean? And that when it was like on that stage, putting it down that last run, like, there's not much, you know, that's like a dream scenario. So it was pretty cool. And
yeah. And the landing on the dub 16 was like perfect.
Yeah. It was just like top to bottom what I wanted. And then, podium did the thing and it was like any other day, you know, you podium at X Games, you're going to celebrate with friends. You're going to go somewhere and like hang out with people, do something, you know, just like be social and like enjoy it. And for me, it was like maybe 2:30 p.m. and I was like, damn, I can't really like go and see anyone or like hang out with anyone. So I just went home. I like obviously did the whole, you know, interviews and the podium and whatever, and then I went back to my apartment and I had a bath. Like went back to apartment, turned the lights off, had a bath, and was just like chilling.
Fuck yeah.
Trying to like just.
Did you have your medal with you in the bath?
No. No, that thing was still in the like case for sure.
Looking at it.
Yeah. No, I like called my mom and dad, you know, said what up, and then I had a bath, chilled out, tried to like get, you know, my adrenaline down, my heart rate down a bit. And then I think I had a nap, and then that night was knuckle huck. So it was just like an insane day. And right after I had a nap, I remember I woke up to get ready to go ski knuckle huck. And that was when I got the call from my coach, obviously congratulating me as well, but being like, yo, you're officially on the Olympic team. Like,
let's go.
Just medaled the X Games, going to the Olympics, you know, like what, like how do you top that, you know?
That's a good day.
Yeah. And then going to ski knuckle huck with all the homies, like at that point I couldn't get the smile off my face, you know, I was so hyped. And going to ski knuckle huck and had like super fun night, did some tricks I'd never thought I would do on a knuckle, like super hyped on all the stuff I did, wasn't expecting anything as well, just like had a sick session. And that was almost like as fun as the slopestyle, you know, like watching everyone throw down the knuckle and like being a part of that was like so fresh. It's just so fun.
That was a sick and diverse lineup, I guess you could say.
For sure.
There was Quinn Wolferman, Jake Majot, Alex Hall, Colby Stevenson, Matej, Will Berman, Keegan Kilbride, and yourself.
Yeah. The dogs.
Yeah.
Like it was so sick to be a part of. Yeah.
And you had some really dope, like, I don't know how you could even call them, because sometimes the combos are stuff that we never see. So you had like, what, a five into like a switch court seven or switch court 10?
Yeah. I did like a five knuckle bound switch court 10. That was like another Hail Mary. Like, just try it. We'll see.
Yeah, because it's all tricks that you never try in real life, I guess. Like,
for sure. Yeah, I did like, yeah, I did like some like hockey stop misties on the knuckle, you know. And like, I did like a cork 10 off, just like straight cork 10, like no butt or anything, which it was like mad scary, but I was like hyped on trying it and stuff. But yeah, that was insane. And like to watch Quinn just like dominate that knuckle, like he was out there the whole week skiing so well as everyone was practicing, and like just learning all these things in front of us and then like perfecting them. And it was so sick to watch. Yeah.
How did you go about it for a comp like that? Because, you know, it's not your usual big air or slope comp. It might be more of a relaxed session, if I can say. Like, it's not, you know, the first year they did it, it seemed more like a fun event, and that then they turned into more of an official comp.
Yeah.
What's your mindset going into something like that, especially on a day, as you said, where you got your medal in slopestyle, you got your okay for the Olympics?
Yeah. It was the most stress-free contest I've ever been a part of. It was like hard to explain. Just, you know, anytime you're on the world, like in X Games, usually you're pretty like pretty nervous, you know? And
yeah,
I'd be lying if I say I wasn't nervous, but it was like the best feeling of like in a contest I've been a part of, for sure. It was so fun. Like every run, watching what everyone's doing and like, you know, trying stuff that you would not normally try. And, just like the energy of the crowd too was also insane, you know, because the big air, like when you're watching it from below, you don't see a lot of the trick. You sort of just see them landing, you know what I mean? And in the knuckle, you're going so much deeper because you're starting so much, you know what I mean? So I feel like the knuckle huck for spectators is really sick to watch as well.
Might be even more fun than big air, or
like
a better view of the whole trick.
Big air is also insane. So like it's, you know, but
I do remember seeing big air comps from the bottom, and I didn't like it because I had a hard time knowing the trick because the first half was kind of missing.
Yeah, you don't know if they took off switch or regular. Or like what the exactly. I think that too. Like I watching on TV is almost better because you see like how big the jump is and stuff when you're way below, especially that landing so long. So you're kind of like just looking up like, whoa, you know?
Yeah. One thing you made me think of is the aspect of X Games and live TV and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
How is it for you and maybe the athletes in general, that whole sense of like live TV and ESPN and all of that? Is that something you're conscious of when you're riding, or you just like forget about it once you're like on your skis?
Well, I feel like everyone's pretty used to media being around them, you know, like being in World Cups and stuff. Like there's TV crews, camera people around. so it's not necessarily a lot different. It's just a bigger scale, you know, like a lot more people, a lot more, you know. Like,
there's definitely way more eyes on you than at a normal World Cup.
Let's say. Like it's on ESPN. Like it's a big ordeal, you know, like it's live television. So it's definitely a bit stressful. Like you don't want to like embarrass yourself and slam, but I don't know. I feel like people are pretty good in our sport at like just blocking that out or not stressing about it too much, or at least it's hard to say for other people. But for me, I don't find it's almost like a motivator. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, this is sick. Like,
yeah,
this is, you know, like this is big time, which is nice.
So as you said, 1 week after the X Games was the Olympics, first Olympics, Beijing we mentioned it quickly, but you're really good friends with all the Canadian team.
Yeah.
It seems like back in the days, people in skiing were really close and tight-knit, relating to their movie crew almost.
Yeah.
Like you had the level one crew with, you know, Hornbeck and Phil and Henrik, and you had the Stepped boys.
Yeah.
It seems like we almost find that in national teams nowadays, almost. Like if I look at the Canadian national team, I'd see you guys putting a movie together as a crew because you really are like good friends that are a tight crew.
For sure. Yeah. No, it's like I was saying, you're just traveling with your best friends, you know? So it's like pretty, like, I don't know how it is with all the national teams, but you know, for our crew, it's like, it's just my best friends. So it's hard to like describe how like fun it is. Like it just never really gets old because you're always with, you know, you're traveling the world with your best friends doing the same thing, stuff that you're passionate about. So it's like, it's hard to complain about, you know, and we still do complain about stuff, but we definitely shouldn't. Yeah, it's just always good times. You're always laughing, doing stupid stuff, you know, like I'll tell this story quick. And then we'll get back to the Olympics, but it's just in my mind right now.
Go ahead. We want stories.
Yeah. We land. It was after the Olympics, going to Teens in this, we land in Geneva and we're driving up to Teen, and I got put on being the driver. We're just landed off like a 12-hour flight from Montreal or Toronto or something. So we're all super jet lagged, like, can hardly speak, you know, just like zombies. And I'm in the driver's seat, and there's five boys, like three in the back, one in the front, me and driver. And we're driving like from Geneva into France. And I like, whatever, pretty tired. And I take this exit because we're all hungry. We're going to go to McDonald's. And I am like, I realize halfway through, like, it was like a roundabout, and then I took the first exit and I was like, damn, I took the wrong exit. I needed to take the next one in the roundabout. And I thought it was two-way traffic. So I just popped a Yui, but it was both ways going this way.
Damn.
So I was going back into this one way or this roundabout, I like looked and it was a sign saying like, do not enter. I was like, damn, like this is so sketchy. I have all of my friends and they're all like, damn, we're in a one way. Like, this is not good. And as soon as I try and get back into the roundabout, a cop pulls up coming out of the on, like coming the right way of into the on, and I'm coming into his nose, and he just pulls me over nose to nose. Like, we just stop on the highway like this, and I'm just like, I'm fucked. And all the boys are just cracking up like, you're such an idiot. And so that's like kind of the stuff that, you know, happens. And then I had to follow them back to the police station.
Really?
Yeah, they like made me drive behind them back to the police station. I did another UE, like went onto the highway. We get there and I like get out of the car and the guy has like cuffs ready to cuff me to like go into the police station. And I'm like, so I'm pretty bummed at this point, you know, like you're going to have to pay this ticket following this police guy. And I'm like, dude, I just followed you for 20 minutes to the police station. You think I'm going to run away? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to run, dude. Like, you don't have to cuff me. And he's like, yeah, true. All good. And I just like walk behind him.
he didn't like the like, hey, I'm a tourist, I made a mistake. Like, he really wasn't into that.
Oh no, I played that card, but it was not going well.
Damn. Yeah.
But yeah, back to the Olympics. I feel like a good starting point for, you know, this conversation is, you know, obviously the crazy COVID strict going into Beijing, you know, like the getting on the flight, you have to do a bunch of tests, like a test every day for 6 days leading up to the flight. So I'd go get tested at, you know, a local spot, just like normal stuff. And then getting on the flight, it was a rapid test to at the airport to be able to get on. So we're finally like on the flight. I'm starting to sleep, or like I'm finally sinking in, you know, I'm going to the games. This is like crazy, you know.
Because with all those tests and everything, you're like always on the edge of, exactly. I might not go.
Yeah. And I tested negative like 6 days in a row. So I was like, this is, it finally worked. You know, I went to X Games, didn't get sick, didn't get hurt. It was worth it. Like, this is, you know, finally sinking in. And I go land in Beijing. We do another test when we land to get into the Olympic Village. Like a double, it was like a tooth, nose, and a throat. Like, it was like the worst one I'd ever done. And we're get to our apartment, and all of us were staying together. And this is like 6 hours later, maybe, because it was the biggest process to get from the plane through the Beijing airport to the Olympic Village. It was like mayhem. But we did a test there at the, you know, the super shitty one. And I get to the apartment and we're all opening, like my team's all opening the Lululemon stuff that, you know, like our Team Canada gear. And our team manager walks in and it's like, yo, Max, you've tested positive at the airport. You got to come with me right now. And I like, you know, it was like, that was really when it sunk in, you know, like I got there, I was opening all our stuff. We're like in Beijing, this is happening. And as soon as that, like, as soon as that sunk in, TM walks in. Yeah. You're positive. You got to come with me to the quarantine spot. So I like,
and you wasn't trolling.
No.
That was for real.
I haven't really told this story, but yeah, I tested positive and I was already in my room and they didn't really want to move me. So basically I just was by my, like, yeah, just locked in my room, couldn't like leave or whatever. And all my roommates left my spot because we had just gotten there. And I basically, the only way I could get out of it was if I tested negative 3 times in a row. So then it would be like confirmed as like a false positive or like something, you know. It was maybe the worst night of my life, dude. Like, I had to get tested that night. Like, as soon as I tested positive, the people, like these people in hazmat suits, came and tested me in my room.
That's scary. Like, you're at the other corner of the world.
Yeah.
And like, these hazmat suits don't look like friendly.
No. It was like, it was full on. And yeah, it scared the shit out of me, dude. Like, so, yeah. And the test result was going to come back in the morning. So I had to sleep that night on it and then wake up in the morning and see, you know, and I was so jet lagged, so tired, and I didn't sleep a minute that night, dude. Like I was just panic attack the whole night, just stressing about, like, because if I had tested positive, it would have been 14 days in like a different hotel, in a quarantine hotel, like
locked in China all alone.
China. And then getting out of the country is like a whole hectic process. And you don't get to compete, obviously. Like you're gonna miss the Olympics. So that was like,
fuck.
You know, getting there on this huge high and then all of a sudden just the craziest low, like trying to pull myself together. And yeah, test came back negative and it, you know, helped a bit, but I needed two more negatives. So in between each test, they had to wait like 12 hours or something. So I was in my room, locked in there for like 2 days almost. And we have quite a bit of time before, you know, we start skiing or anything, just to adjust to the time change. But yeah, like the worst maybe 35 hours or 40 hours of my life for sure, just waiting for these negatives to come back because I'm like just so stressed. And then
and like those Olympic rooms aren't like big condos. It seems like really small one bedroom room.
Where... No, it was just a cell. Like it was just a, yeah. So
it's not as if you have room to exercise or whatever. You just,
oh yeah, you're locked in. And yeah, it ended up coming back negative after my third one. And I just could finally breathe. I was like, no way that just happened to me. Like that, it was just false positive. I guess it happens. And like,
yeah.
I just happened to be the guy that it happened to. And every, like, literally, I remember leaving my room and going to get food in the dining hall because I hadn't eaten in like 2 days because I couldn't. I was like so nervous and stressed. Fuck. And just like walking out, like, you know how, like, you know, like a wrestler walks into the ring, just like the, you know, like the big dog feeling like on top of the world, like, oh, like this is so sick.
Just got out of jail.
Yeah, just got out of jail and just feeling so free and like, yeah, crazy, crazy time of my life for sure. I remember thinking like everything now after that is just a bonus, you know. Mm-hmm. Getting to ski and getting a beer is just a bonus. Like nothing matters. Yeah,
it kind of resets your perspective 100%.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And how was the actual competition? You were in both big air and slope style.
Yeah.
The field is ultra stacked.
Crazy stacked. Yeah.
You're with Team Canada, where Teal, Evan, Edward are all podium contenders in their own rights in different disciplines, let's say, or maybe both. Like they're all great in both disciplines.
Oh yeah.
How was it?
Dude, epic.
Or maybe we can start with big air. You didn't make finals.
No.
But looking at the results, like you were around 20th. Looking at the results, like all the guys in front of you are like top dogs.
Yeah.
And you're like, it must be so hard these days, big air wise.
Yeah, I think the big air was super fun. We got some pretty good weather for it. It was like pretty warm, slushy. The jump is amazing. Like I love that big air that they make. You know, it's like that. It looks like it's part of an old nuclear plant, but they build this like huge metal structure to make this perfect jump. It's like endless landing. Perfect. And yeah, I didn't ski my best. I landed my first trick was a switch 18 stale, which I did like really good and was mad hyped to land that.
Switch 18 stale plus the ones you do are like super tweaked.
Yeah, I was like for sure. Yeah, feeling super good after that. I landed that first run and was like, damn. I was working on this trick. It was like a dub 12, it was like a double 14 set. I would wrap. It was like a cork 9 in the first flip and then a switch cork 3 for the second flip. So I'd do like a cork 9 stale in the first flip and then like a block switch cork 3, kind of like blind coming around a switch.
Yeah. Is it possible that you posted one from New Zealand this summer? Something close to that?
I don't think it was New Zealand. Maybe I posted one from like last spring in Absolute Park or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'd done it a few times. Was feeling pretty good at it going into it. And then I just had like weird speed issues. I didn't like trust myself going fast enough. And I just landed pretty high on the landing and didn't grab it as probably well as I could have. And that's sort of what costed me.
You didn't trust yourself, like meaning you were scared of going too fast?
Yeah, because in that trick, it was like a lot of it has to do with speed, or that's how I thought of it, because the last flip is so blind that I have to land, like if I go too small, like I'm just gonna land in a mini me and fall over. But if I go too big, I can't really like save it, because I don't necessarily know how big I am, because you're looking
upwards
at the takeoff. So you're kind of just guessing. Like it's really, when you feel going off the jump, it's like that's how hard you're gonna spin it, and you sort of just have to ride that out. So, yeah, I thought I was going bigger than I was, and I landed pretty high on the landing and just wasn't. I still landed it and was stoked on doing it, but it wasn't my best, unfortunately. Yeah. But to take away from it, like the event was the inaugural one, like the first big air that skiing had done. And I thought it was just special to be a part of, really, like the whole energy of it and how everyone was skiing. And you know, I would do each run and just wait for homies at the bottom and like, you know, support each other. And it was like just an incredible, especially on the last run. You know, I dropped pretty early in the heat, and you know, coming down to the bottom waiting for everyone to go. And it was just, you know, I'd known I wasn't going to make finals, but it was like not the biggest deal for me, because it felt like, you know, just showing off free skiing in that way and doing it like the way I wanted to, I was like content with it, you know?
Yeah. And there's always been a concern, or, you know, I guess concern is a good word, that big air might turn into aerials, you know?
For sure.
That it might not look good going forward into the future. It's been like a constant subject of debate. And then there's the aspect of not going into the right direction, and then there's the aspect of being on the biggest stage, which is the Olympics.
Yeah.
But I feel like it didn't look at all like aerials. Like you guys showed big air in a great way.
I think hopefully that's how most people saw it as well. You know, that's what the whole goal was, I thought.
Like Burke's dub, what was his winning trick? Dub bio, right?
Yeah, to qualify, I think he did a dub bio 16 and then a switch triple 19, like, or something, like something.
And then Henrik's nose butt triple, and like everyone was doing like free ski tricks, like nothing wacky.
And it was really cool to be a part of. And the thing I think about most still is, you know, because of it being in China, they got a nation spot. And one of the Chinese skiers, his name's Jinbo. And we all called him Jinbo. And it was like, he was this awesome dude. And he, you know, he spoke English, but not super well, but he was this super friendly guy. And, you know, really good skier, but it's so hard to be at the level that everyone's at, especially in big air. So it was, you know, he was trying super hard and, you know, landing big tricks, but, you know, not at the level that everyone else was. And, but we were all the boys were just like, so like hyping him up the whole week. And I think he must've had one of the best days of his life in that big air qualifier, because we were all at the bottom. And I remember he did a switch 18 and he'd never tried it before. It was like his first one. And we all like freaked out. It was like Henrik, Finn, Ahal, Kobe, you know, all the boys there just like hyping him up. And I thought that was really cool to see as well, you know, like having, you know, a kid like that that's underdog and, you know, trying his hardest and, you know, not necessarily a medal contender, but being there, like giving it his all, and all of us just like supporting him like we'd known him forever, you know?
That's the whole spirit of free skiing, where exactly. You're in the park, your friend might not be as good as you, but that's not the point.
Like, exactly. Yeah.
If he's trying something and landing it, then that's the whole spirit.
Yeah. And that was for me, that was like the coolest takeaway of Big Air. Like, I thought that was so sick. Yeah.
Dope. And Switch 18, it's like, was it Switch Dub 18?
Yeah. Switch Dub 18. I think
that's crazy.
But yeah, like just tried it, never tried it, and landed it. And like, it was you know, maybe a bit loose, but for him, it was like, you know, he was being the Super Bowl, you know, he was just like in his home country, you know, all his peers were stoked for him too. And like, I think it was just a really good reference. Like, you wouldn't see that in any other sport, you know, if someone isn't doing as well and is from a nation that normally doesn't do as well, and all the other nations are like as hype for him to land this one thing, like,
yeah,
that never happens. And I think in skiing and in snowboarding, I think that was shown so well in the Olympics, you know, like for the snowboarding girls, like after the podium, they all like hugged each other and like had this, like everyone like tackled each other because they were so hyped, you know. It wasn't like anyone was like bummed or mega competitive, or like obviously mega competitive, but not like having anything against any other people, which was sick. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really cool story.
Yeah.
And then how was slopestyle for you?
Yeah, man. It was cold.
I said the same thing to Henrik. The course seemed odd to me because mm-hmm. it didn't look like such a hard course from the outside, but from seeing the people go down, a lot of people were missing their runs.
Yeah. It was probably the hardest slope course I'd ever been a part of, like slope style contest ever been a part of, for sure. The rails weren't necessarily like, it almost is deceiving. Like, the rails are these huge tubes, a lot of them, or like, you know, don't look super long, but that like rainbow on the very left side, the first rail, the rainbow to down rail was so long, like just sliding it to get to the end was hard enough, you know? And even that first, like the first rail on the right, the one I was hitting, it was like a tube to transfer to two down tubes. And both of them were like 30 feet, maybe longer, you know, maybe like 33 feet or something, like each rail. So in theory, it's an easy rail, like it's a tube, so it shouldn't be that hard. But to get to the end of it, like you were going pretty fast, you know, like it wasn't like the rails were crazy high consequence, just long. So that's what I think got to a lot of people, for sure.
Yeah, on your first rail, you were doing a switch up pretzel transfer that seemed pretty hard. Then switch cork for disaster. I had forgotten about that, dude. That's so sick.
Yeah, thanks.
Dude, that's a trick that like 10 years ago was a video game trick in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, you don't do a switch cork for on. You just don't do, well, maybe we've seen some in like a big box disaster kind of thing where you're going straight into it, but on a rail going from the side, that's so sick.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it was a perfect rail for it.
And also trying it in a slope run, you're not just like doing it at a park shoot and whatever, you're doing it in a slope run. Dude, yeah. That's sick.
I know. Yeah, I was really hyped on my rail run. Like the most weak part was the first trick, but it was like such a weird thing because the hardest trick in my run for me to land consistently was the front up front two, which is like such a basic trick, you know, like a front up front two on a rail. It seems so easy, but that rail, for some reason, I just was having trouble getting to the end. I would fall off right or left sometimes and just like don't know what I did wrong, just because it was so long, like it just hard to get to the end.
But was that also happening during practice?
For sure. Yeah, it was like a risk, but it seemed like that was the best trick in my mind at the time to do the most consistent and to set up for the next two tricks.
Right. Because it's not just what rail you like the most. It's also, well, if I want to go into the switch quirk 4-on, then I need to line switch. I need to be at that rail.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a whole game that you got to figure out the whole week, you know? And I was set on that at that time. And it's so funny because the switch quirk 4, it seems like definitely the hardest trick, but it was kind of the most consistent. Like it wasn't sliding a huge long piece of rail. I was maybe doing only like this much, you know, maybe a few feet or four feet.
But what seems hard to me as someone who sucks is is just the angle. Yeah, if you come off a bit, if you land a bit on your tail, like, yes, you're not sliding it for long, but coming in a bit on your nose or a bit on your tail, you're falling.
Exactly. Yeah. But for me, like, I'd done so many switch fours and it became to the point where like I was being super patient with my tail so I could get like a little bit of off access in there, and it was starting to get more consistent. Like I was working into it more and more. And then the switch quirk four, I would just, it was scary to like commit to the, like dumping my feet above my head. But then once I started doing it more, I was landing on the rail consistently. It was just like if I'd land on my tails and noses, I would maybe get a weird bounce. But I was doing it pretty consistent. And then the next rail, I was doing like a back swap front cork four on the Canon. And that was like probably the easiest one of my run, which seems like it isn't. But for me, it was just like a quick back swap and then the same rotation, you know, like a switch quirk five, which I'm super comfortable with.
Yeah. And then after that up rail, you had a left up 14.
Yeah.
Going into a, there was a big like Kimbo session style roller, almost kind of knuckle huckish. And it's funny that we had just talked about it because the trick you do is like a 540 bounce to a switch quirk sev, which is pretty much similar to what you did in knuckle huck.
Yeah, it was.
Were you stoked on, like, I know you would have had anyways time to practice at the Olympics, but it's kind of cool that you did the knuckle hook because it kind of prepared you for that type of feature.
Yeah, I actually, I wasn't doing that the whole week. I was hitting the jump part, like the transfer jump, but that, it was strange. That jump was the hardest for speed. It either felt like you went really small and just made it over the knuckle, or went just to the bottom because it was a crazy step up and a steep landing. So the trajectory, it felt like if you went a bit small, you're a bit lower. So you're catching it right on the top of the knuckle. But if you went just a bit faster, it felt like instead of landing at the top, you were only a few more feet higher, but you were just going to the very bottom. Does that make sense? So like your speed had to be super dialed in to land in sweet spot. And I did see A Hall doing some butter stuff on that as well. And I definitely didn't want to like bite his ste, you know, like take something off his, because that's his, he was doing like a switch butter seven. So like bounce switch five. It was super creative. And like he did, was doing it super well. So I was trying to do something different for sure, than him, because I didn't want to like, you know, cause he did in qualifiers and I didn't, so I was trying to like be respectful in that part, but I wanted to make it my own. That trick like that I was doing in knuckle huck just seemed perfect for that feature. And I actually learned it the morning of finals practice. Like I hadn't done it all week. And then I took a few tries to figure out the speed. Like I had to go as fast as I could, like as fast as you would hit to the jump. Cause it was like a knuckle and then almost like a second knuckle in the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was actually quite a big gap. It was almost like as big as the jump gap.
Would be dope if knuckle huck was something like that.
Yeah, dude. I think knuckle huck for sure, if they make a, you know, something like a bit different, it would.
A unique roller that's only there for that.
It would make the tricks. Yeah, it would like boost the levels super high.
Yeah. And then you end off your 540 to switch sev, you go and switch and switch dub 18 stale.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'm looking back at that run and I'm bummed for you right now because that's like a podium run.
Yeah, man. Like it was a tough pill to swallow. Like it was as much as like the experience was so amazing, definitely it was hard to accept at the end that I you know, I was so close. I felt like, and it was just that first rail, like I landed my rail run, the first run in finals, but then didn't land my jumps. And then the second two runs I had, I messed up my rails and landed my jumps. And the last run was like sort of the most complete run I had, but it was just a bit of a slip up on the first rail. I just fell off, you know, a bit early, like swooped my noses and didn't get the front two around super clean. And that's what it takes to the podium or not, you know, like it's.
That was the difference between the difference you being second, third, first, maybe, well, let's say podium.
Hopefully you never know. Right.
You never know, but like that run was sick.
Yeah. And I was really hyped on it. Just, it was tough to swallow that like the trick I fell on was a front two. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, are you kidding me?
Stumping switch cork for disaster. But
yeah. And I'm falling on that. Like, what? Like, I can do that trick on any rail in my sleep, you know? Like, not to sound like I'm bragging, but that's like an easy one for me. But just that rail made it so tough.
It's like in a hockey when there's the, you know, if a team's losing, they pull out their goalie at the end of the game.
Yeah.
There's those highlight reels where the guy comes in with the empty net and misses it.
Exactly. Exactly, man. That's how I felt for sure. Like scoring on your own net almost, you know what I mean? Like, you're just like so bummed. I remember finishing the contest and being pretty gutted. Like, they had like a FaceTime thing where you could FaceTime your family, and like they contact my family without me knowing. So at the bottom of my run, it's like this huge screen.
But then you're not in the mood to talk necessarily.
Yeah. And it's like my whole family, so many people in a room watching me on TV, like Canada posters, like everyone's had their face painted red. And I'm just like trying so hard to get through it. Like, you can see me in the interview. I'm like, hey, what's up, guys? Like, good to see you. You know, like just like, kind of, you know, and I can usually snap out of it. But there I was like, oh, it means a lot. Thank you guys. You know, I miss you so much. And they could tell too. And they were just like enjoying the moment. But
A couple hours later would have been good. But right on the moment,
it was like, 2 minutes after my run, you know, and then there, I get it. Like, it's just media trying to like create a story and whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I snapped out of it a bit, and I watched Ahol land his run, and I just like remember giving him the biggest hug and just screaming, you know, being like, I'm so hyped for you. You know, when he won, I remember like coming up to him and just like bear hugging him, because Ahol and I are super close. Like, he's one of my good homies and one of my favorite skiers as well. And just like so happy that was the run that took it, you know, like to the creativity and like how he did a 16 and then a switch butter, like 12 or 10 and then a double 9, you know, like in his Ahol way, you know, like,
yeah,
he took all the whatever spreadsheets that make a good slope style skier, big air skier, and just threw them out the window. You know, like, I'm sure there's a bunch of teams that like in their higher up offices have like, you know, ways to the top, you know, like this, like very linear, like do this trick, get money, you know? And you just like
learn your dub 10, learn your triple 14.
Exactly. And then... Yeah. And that was so sick to me how he did it. And, you know,
yeah, and it's so cool because it seems like Ahol is like the new generation version of Henrik, where like everyone's rooting for him.
Yeah, exactly. If he wins, it's everyone's hyped, you know, which is so sick. And I think...
And deservingly.
And is like more than, you know, so deservingly. And all the Olympic winners at that point were just such geez. Like Joss and then Oystein and then Ahol, you know, I couldn't pick three better people to like... show slope style in that way, you know, just such bosses in their own right. Yeah.
All at great moments in their time. Like Joss's run was perfect at that time. I remember it correctly.
Yeah. Goosebumps.
And it was like the best slope run ever kind of at that time. And then Oystein, same thing, which is, with his both ways switched up 14s, and Yeah.
Yeah. So sick. So it was like the experience was like looking back on it, that it's like a happy, it's like a bittersweet thing, you know, like it was so insane to be there. And really, like, I'm still proud of the way I skied because I felt like I showed my skiing off in a good way. I'm like hyped on it, how it all went down for sure. But at the same time, like, you always play that what if card in your head. Like, if I'd landed that run, you know, if I landed that front up run too, would I be here, right? You know, would I be like, would I have a medal around my neck? You know, like, you never know. And maybe if I did and they weren't vibing with it, that's all good, you know. But I remember, like, I remember I did drug testing after, because we all didn't have to, but I got.
They saw the switch cork for run. They were like,
yo,
I need to drug test you.
yeah, exactly. And I like went into the drug testing, did our thing. And then I walked out and walked past the judges, and they were all like,
respect.
They were all, yeah, they're like really stoked on how I skied, but also like just a bit bummed for me. They're like, dude, like, you know, you can't really say it, but you would have been up there, you know, you would have been like, you know, like,
I don't remember all the runs, in my head right now, but I'm having a hard time seeing a better run than that. Looking at it, like, that's as good as it gets. Yeah. Like, forget the podium, just in the sense of like the individual performance, like, dude, that's such a dope run.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah, like, it's, you always want to like take away good parts about it. And I think I've done that, you know, relatively well, not like fretting on the past too much and trying to like live in the present. But yeah, definitely, like, it kept me up a few nights for sure.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely gets to me, but all good. Like, I think the overall experience and having like good times and not getting hurt, and like, I don't know, it was really fun.
Let's go full cheesy mode. Do you have your eyes set on Cortina?
yeah, I do. I'd be lying if I said I don't, for sure. Like, I'm gonna,
because right now you're like in your prime. Like, you're one of the best in the game right now.
Thank you.
Well,
yeah, hard. It's weird to see myself like that, for sure. It doesn't seem, you know, in my head, it's hard to think like that for sure. But
why?
I don't know, man. It's just a funny it's a funny thought, being like
updating to the fact that you're not a kid anymore and you're actually that guy now.
Exactly. You know, it's the classic story, like, you used to be starstruck when you see all these people and now you're competing with them, you know. It's like the same thing, you know. And it's like, it's a weird transition when you're going into the contest, like, looking up to a lot of people and just hoping to do well, you know, to like showing up and feeling like you're one of the people that can win, you know. And it's a crazy mindset to have, or like how I've felt in the past a little bit, like feeling like you can go and do well consistently and feeling like you're one of the guys that has that talent to be able to do it.
Yeah. Because you did get many podiums on the World Cup stage in the past, like, 4 years, let's say 5 years. But no,
two.
Okay. I thought there was more.
No, yeah, not a whole lot.
Okay. But to get back to my beginning point,
yeah,
we all knew it was brewing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, appreciate it. Yeah, it was a long time coming, but yeah, definitely. Stalked on
because it's something that I don't know, there's that thing that we might forget with slope style, is that linking up a full run is actually super hard. Like, there's a difference between doing like this, let's say someone can do the 7 separate tricks of a slope run,
yeah,
individually for an Instagram post, but like actually lacing them together in the same run is quite hard.
It's super hard. Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's a task, man. It's tough. But I think that's what makes it so rewarding as well, like being able to think about a run that you're super hyped on and like being you know, think about a dream run that you think you're able to do, and then being able to like work your way towards it and build up towards it, and then putting it down in the time that matters. I think that's what like makes competitive like comp skiing fun, is like that battle against yourself. You know what I mean? Yeah.
What do you think helped you maybe be more consistent, or, you know, be more clutch, let's say, recently? Or have you seen a difference, or it's just like a timing maybe?
I think it's just the mental state, honestly. Like, I feel like I've, you know, had talent in the past to be able to get myself in these situations and be able to do well, but having like the experience and the knowledge of like what to do, when to do it, and you know, not, it's like a whole chess game you're trying to play throughout the whole week, you know, practicing too much or practicing too little, you know, doing your tricks enough to like feel comfortable, and then what, you know, what flows with each other, what blends all, you know, to make like a perfect run.
Yeah, in the episode I did with Belmar, he was telling me a lot about, you know, those thoughts that you can have, like practicing not enough, practicing too much. And I think he was telling me something about practice that he's like, well, maybe if I don't land my trick one run out of 10, I don't want to practice 9 runs, and then I'll be like, oh, that's the one where I won't land it, you know, but like...
Exactly. Yeah.
There's so many... and he's right about that, that, you know, but... You know, there's different ways to go about it, I guess. Like, do you want to keep your trick and only do it at your comp run? Do you want to do them like 20 times to be sure?
Yeah. And everyone's different, right? Like, everyone has different ways of going about it. You know, do you want to like save that perfect run for the contest, or do you want to do it 100 times before dropping in? You know, it's like, for me, I try and almost do everything separately, but not fully link them, you know, like maybe I'll try one or two full runs just to see how it goes. But there's a difference between like that mindset when it actually matters and when it's just practice. You know, I feel like when you can click into that gear of like, okay, right now I have to do this run. Like, this is right now, right here. And it's like that crazy, you know, mental battle where it's like, this is the one. And I think people can switch into different gears when it, you know, when that time comes. And I think Henrik is that perfect example. You know, he can just like click into this other mode and go off. Like, it, how he explains it is like, I always hear him saying like, the contest is like a concert, you know, if you're a rapper, and the street part or the footage is like your album. And like, he, no better performer than Henrik, you know what I mean? Like, he can just go off and click into that gear and just like have control over the crowd, you know?
And I think that's something that I mentioned to someone recently, trying to explain how Henrik is good, is that he is extremely talented, but all, like, I think he's at 13 X Games medals, something like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have a similar talent, let's say, quote unquote. Like, you know, a lot of people have been very talented and only have one or two medals.
Yeah.
And it's a big part is that he's super clutch at being good at the right time. Like, you can be super good, but if you're not good on that night, at that moment, then too bad.
And the people that have that is, you know, like, not a whole, like, it's a select few. Like, Ahol's got that clutch, like, damn, I got one run left, I'm gonna shock the world right now, you know. Like, Ahol, Kobe, you know, there's some people out there that like really can make it happen when they need to, you know.
It's, and have you ever talked to him, like Ahol, about that clutch thing, like how he sees it maybe, or how he handles it?
I don't know if we've talked about it. Like, Ahol's so laid back, like, it's hard to get into that conversation with him because he's just like so mellow, you know. So
it's not necessarily something you talk about after comp.
It's like, but you can see, you know, if none of us were competitive, we wouldn't be in the contests, you know what I mean? Like, everyone has that competitive drive, no matter if they say it or not. Like, you want to win as bad as anyone wants to win, and the like mindset of like, oh, I don't care, like whatever. It's just, you know, that like goes out the window when you drop in, like being real, like,
or if, yeah, you know, you wouldn't be there if you didn't care.
Exactly. And it's sick to care. Like it's, I don't know when that whole cool guy thing came in to be like dope. Like what? I care. And everyone does, you know, like you wouldn't be there if you weren't. And like the whole cool guy thing being like, oh, whatever, it's all good. Like,
yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
So all in all, positive experience for the Olympics, even with the jail time in your room and maybe a bit of a bummer on the slip up.
The jail time and the, yeah, the little slip up. It was super cool. Like just the whole experience, the opening ceremonies were insane, you know? Yeah. Super kind of just childhood dream stuff, you know, like the stuff that you think about that you don't really ever think you'll get to experience, like walking into the opening ceremonies with, you know, the sea of red in my Canadian, like Canada team jacket, and like looking up, seeing the huge Olympic rings and like the bird's nest stadium filled with people. Like it was pretty like surreal, you know what I mean? And
how was it being there in real life? Because one thing that struck me as a child was seeing the NHL on TV, and it seemed humongous. And I remember going into a game for the first time, and I was like, "Oh, it's not that big. Like it's
stadium.
It's more. Yeah, it's more. It's it. W- it seemed bigger on TV. Let's say it was sure. still huge, but you know, there was something there. How was it being in that? You know, the ceremony, because on TV it looks like the yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Bird's Nest has got to be one of the biggest stadiums that like holds sporting events. You know, they did the 2008 Olympics, the summer ones there. And that was where the all track, the track stuff was. And that building is pretty insane just to look at. Like it's like the craziest metal structure of like beams going every which way. Like, I don't know how they built that thing. And being, you know, in it and getting to experience that, you're definitely like, whoa, this is pretty crazy.
Moving on from the Olympics, one subject that I really want to talk to you about was the slush games.
Yeah.
Because you're someone that's been one of my favorite skiers for years watching, but I was trying to see, like, where did it come from? Because you haven't been in movies, per se. Mm. And I was like, I think it's the slush games that really made people know about you through the years.
Yeah, I think slush has been, you know, it's funny, I haven't played like a whole bunch of slush games, but I feel like the ones I have played in has been pretty fun, like pretty sweet games, which is fortunate enough. Like the people I've played has just been like good vibes. And I remember talking to ABM about this and how we were like saying how, you know, slush is so sick in a way that like, if you ski well and, you know, you do tricks that are sick and whatever, the winner and loser is not as big as a factor as in a normal contest. You know what I mean? Like you ski well, you do all the things, like you play a sick game and it just happens to like, doesn't go your way at the end and you lose. Mm-hmm. It's still like such a dope piece of skiing that like you're able to show, you know what I mean? So I felt like that.
Yeah, there's still a positive outcome with the content and all of
exactly.
that.
You know, like you play a sick game, you lose. It's like, yeah, you obviously would have wanted to win, but it's not as like as gut wrenching as like when you don't do well or something in a slope style. It's like sick that it shows off the skiing in that way. And I thought that's why like slush is such a unique and cool concept. It was like, you know, put these skiers head to head and get them to do some sick stuff, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. And you say you didn't play that many games, but you were still in games in Whistler. You played the tournament in Ruka in Andorra.
True. Honestly, yeah, I forgot of how many slush games I've done. It's been quite a bit.
How were those tournaments? Because it's a shame that it stopped. I think the last one they were supposed to do got canceled at the beginning of COVID.
Yeah,
which is a bummer.
Yeah.
But it seemed like the sickest thing ever, and people were really enjoying it. Like these days, it's hard to get views on YouTube. It's a, you know, many reasons, but it's hard, let's say. Yeah. those games had 100,000 views. It was like,
yeah, man, they're sick. And like the whole vibe with everyone there and skiing, especially the ones in Andorra, like, dude, unmatched. It's insane. It was like so, so fun being with all that crew. Like, it was, yeah, really sick. Cause like I was pretty young. I went to Andorra to do the Slush Cup, and I think I lost like second round, but I still had a ton of fun. And then I did some games in Whistler with Mark Hendrickson. And then after that, I did another one in Andorra. I went back. And I think I lost first round against Finn. But we had like a sick game and it was really fun. And then pretty much right after, we did one in Ruka in Finland. And those were all like, yeah, really, really sick. Like, I played against Kobe and Antti, Johan Berg. And they were all like really, really fun games. And I thought like we both showed some really sick skiing. And I don't know, I felt like in Slush, you can get really caught up in your own head with like being in a bad mental state and it shows up on camera. You know what I mean? But I always had a tough time watching. It's like, if you can tell someone's really stressing and skiing badly, like it makes it so much harder to watch, you know?
But I think there's a thing where you know how you're feeling. Whereas if people don't know how you're feeling inside, they maybe don't notice it.
For sure. Yeah. And I think I've been lucky with the games, like how they've gone with me. Like, I've been in a relatively good mood. And I feel like when I'm in a good mood and I'm skiing, I'm like yelling a lot and like hyped and like doing some stupid stuff, you know?
Just like the games of Henrik where he's like barking all the time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because it's
funny, but it's because he is in such a good mood.
Yeah, he's just hyped. Like, he's doing what he loves. And like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, that it doesn't get better. So I feel like I portrayed like myself in a good way, but not like thinking about it. I was just like a happy guy. And I think a lot of the comments were like, you know, Max seems like a fun dude just to hang out with regardless of skiing. So I felt like that was like a good way to show your Slush skiing. And like,
yeah, I think it helps a lot, as you said, to showcase personality, because sometimes what you guys maybe miss on a bit in the social media realm is showing us your personality.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to be out there too much. You don't want to get to the cringe part. I think some guys are like maybe more private. There's many reasons, but sometimes what we only see is your nice trick and we don't get to know you. But with the Slush games, you kind of have to with all that's going on.
Cameras in your face and you're going to have to talk. You're going to have to like be social. So it's like,
and that's cool.
Yeah, and the way they edited them, man, like Joss and Napes and like Lasser, they edited them in such a funny way, man. Like they spend hours just like getting little clips of you. Like, I don't know, if a Slush game is good, it usually like makes you laugh. I always thought,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like hilarious, and then it's sick to watch the skiing as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you think it seems like it might be hard sometimes to keep getting better at things you're not as good at, with like, let's say, slope runs, where you know you're going to do that dub bio 16, so you practice it and not necessarily other things. And it seems like Slush is really a good way to switch away from that, because
yeah, like
you're going against Vinny Gagne and he's going to force you to try something you've never done.
Exactly. And that's what's so sick about it. You get to see like people's weaknesses firsthand. And that's why like the overall best skier always does well, is because like they have everything. And I definitely have weaknesses, like with unnat rail tricks, like switch left for me is like a lot tougher. So if people are doing like always everything, you know, throughout the whole game, like I can keep up, but a lot of the like switch unnat stuff I have an issue with, you know, especially like jumping. Like I can do it, I just is my like weaker side, you know. So and like some people will take that to advantage, you know, being like, oh, he's not as good as this, so I'm going to do more of this, you know. And like,
yeah, and you can see that sometimes when it gets to the last letter and they're like, okay, I'm going to do a trick I know you
exactly. But for me, like I use my strengths to an advantage of like on rails being like kind of like strange tech tricks that like you wouldn't do a lot, you know, or like, yeah, just weird stuff that like, I don't know, I always think is really fun, like using all your edges and doing everything always, but I don't know, it sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, you know.
Is that something that you do sometimes with the Team Canada or other people when you're out there doing some slush games for fun? Try and practice stuff?
Not as much, I don't think. Nah, like maybe I have in the past, maybe at Maximize, because it's kind of hard. You need like a place that it's really quick laps and you need to like be able to get into sessions. Because a lot of the times, like if you're...
But Maximize can be odd because it's like one hit.
Yeah, exactly. Like Maximize would be sort of the place to do it because, you know, it's quicker, or like COP or something. But a lot of the time when we're on the road, like skiing and stuff, everyone's pretty working on their own stuff. You know what I mean? Like you're definitely feeding off everyone's energy and doing stuff, but you're definitely working on the stuff that you need to work on. Mm. Yeah.
And you're someone who's really into and good at skateboarding. Like, skateboarding is that thing where it's so hard to get at just a good level that, you know, when you see someone like you, it's like respect. Do you see a lot of similarities? Because at the basis, the whole slush concept comes from skateboarding, right?
Yeah, from the barracks.
Yeah.
Yeah, battle at the barracks. Yeah, skating has just always been a huge part of what I do. Like I can't remember a time where I didn't skate, you know. There's like videos of me super young. I have like skateboards in the backyard, like rolling down on my driveway, you know, like super, super young footage. And when I was young, like I grew up ski racing all winter, because my parents were both big ski racers. Like I ski raced until I was about 14. So I had a bit of a later like transition into free skiing. But skating was like my more creative outlet at that time, I feel like. You know, I had an indoor skate park in the city I grew up in, or little town I grew up in Ontario. And I would go there every day after school, you know, and I could skate all winter, which was so sick. So being a young kid, I wanted to be a pro skater so bad. That was like, you know, like Bob Burnquist was my idol. And you know, like, so that was what I was working towards. Like that was my dream. And ski racing in the winter was super fun for me, but I knew it wasn't like something I wanted forever. I just felt like I was doing it at that time because I was pretty good at it. Like I had good results ski racing, and I had some fun doing it, like being in that attack mode and like, you know, going as fast as you can down a course and like, you know, flow state was like super fun for me, but skating was definitely the number one priority in my life at that time. So I took it pretty, not serious, but like wanted, you know, I wanted to get better and wanted to be really good. Yeah.
I'm not a big skate connoisseur. Mm. 99% of my time skating was on Tony Hawk, but that would be cool to see you at some point on a video project, like mixing skating and skiing and skateboarding.
Yeah,
because I feel like you're the guy right now that needs to do a video project, because your rail skill and your style and all you have to offer is so fitting, and plus we still haven't seen it. So is that an aspect of the sport that interests you? Because there's some guys that are focused on competitions and are totally fine with the fact that they enjoy that more. You know, they're not ashamed, but you know, that's what they like more and that's fine. Yeah. Is it something that you're interested in?
Oh,
producing,
dude,
some video projects?
100%, man. Yeah. Like that's where my priority, I feel like this season is going to shape itself into. Like that's what I really want to focus on this year. And obviously still compete with, you know, a goal of doing well and being able to travel the Canadian team and like do my thing. Because, you know, that's a big part of my ski career and my ski identity is like competition skiing. But I think if there's a year to take time off and really put all my eggs in a basket and put into like hard work into a video project would be this year. And I literally, like what you're saying is exactly the concept that I want to do. Like I want to have some street skating footage as well as skiing footage in like a project, you know, because I feel like it's not that different or it's not that, I mean, like it's hasn't really been done.
There's Volers. I don't know if you're too young, but there was Volers back in the day. And there was also Gibberish that had some skateboarding in their ski movies. And I always thought that that was cool to have the mix.
For sure.
And there's also some clips of you during the pandemic doing some really steezy stuff on snowboard.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, you got to mix it all.
I know. That's, yeah, it's, again, funny you say that. I want to, like, skiing and skateboarding, but would be like the main two things that I would want to put, you know, film, as we talked about, some street, you know, and try and do a Quebec trip, Calgary trip. If Toronto gets snow, try and do some, you know, hopefully, but film some street 100%, like try and stack a bunch of footage and then try to sprinkle a few snowboard clips in there as well, like try and handle some metal on the board and get down, because I feel like that would be, I don't know, a bit of a curveball to throw in, you know, some footage of snowboarding. Like I'd love to be able to do that, and I think I could, you know, get by on some rails that I've seen here before. Like I have some ideas and stuff, so yeah, like a skiing, skateboarding and snowboarding video in an ideal world would be like how I want to do it.
That would be insane. And yeah. I think your rail skills plus like air sense would fit very well with street skiing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've street skied before. Like I've gone out with homies and filmed a bit. You know, I have like a bit of footage back in the day with Liberty. We did like a few street trips. But I, honestly, it's just been so hard in the past few years with the Olympics. Like that's really the big thing that is got in the way, like the qualifying process for the games and being at the top of your game. It's like I wanted to put effort into that to feel like I was prepared enough to go to the Olympics and do well. That's like, you know, and some people did that as well as film street, which to me is like so impressive, you know, like
But in what sense, just to clarify, like in the sense of managing the schedule?
Yeah, managing schedule, managing their time, managing their body, like their their injuries. You know, street skiing is not safe. Like it's so hard on your body. So that's why, like, you know, and they have a good crew to do it with. You know, I it's been like I've wanted to do this as bad as anyone else. I just felt like I haven't had the right opportunities or worked hard enough for it. I've just been sort of throwing my energy into contest skiing, but this is the year I'm going to try and, you know, make that a priority.
That's sick to hear. I think people are going to be hyped on that. I think you're pretty much one of the people's favorite right now. do you feel that like on Instagram or on everything else? I feel like people are really stoked on you.
Yeah, it's nice. I don't know. There's so many dope skiers out there, so it's hard to say that. Like,
but I mean, in the sense of like love from the people, do you feel it?
Yeah, it's been pretty like overwhelming. Like pretty funny that people are that down with what I get up to. It's not something I would have expected, you know. But
it got to a point where like I was filming with Belmar, who's not a, you know, he's a legend in his own right. And he was doing a back swap to switch. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's like Max Moffat. Like, as you may, like you do some tricks that are so stylish that like when someone does it, you think of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that means a lot that it's, you know, coming to Belmar, because Belmar is the best, dude. He's like, he's the Don. He's so sick.
He's the Quebec Don.
Yeah. He's one of, it's hard to say, like, I don't know if I have a favorite skier, but Belmar's up there, you know, like he's as just a person as well to hang out with, you know, like his last few years on the squad, I was, you know, traveling with him a lot. And like, spending time with him was always a treat, you know, like you're just always laughing about random stuff. I don't know, hard to explain. And just his skiing speaks for itself, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned it quickly, talking about Liberty, Liberty Street Clips. Mm-hmm. There are some guys in skiing that feels like it takes a bit of time to get some love from brands. Like the real ones who follow the sport closely know that they need their shot. Like I remember Henrik was on Ninth Ward for a couple of years, and when he got on Armada, it was like, yeah, well, damn right. Like, yeah, get him on Armada. And same thing with Hornbeck, that he was like, he was on Liberty also at some point. And then when he got on Armada, it was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Are you making some moves or what?
Yeah, well, I just very, very fortunate, lucky to be able to make the switch over to Armada and start a new relationship that I'm planning on having for a long, long time. And I'm very it's another one of those dream scenarios where you don't really expect it, but it's come into place, and very hyped on this opportunity that I've been given. Like, it's something that I've wanted for a while, and my agent and I have been in the works with Armada for the past few months, and I can finally say it's a go ahead. So I'm
Dude, congrats.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Dude, that's a legendary lineup you're following. Tanner, JP O'Claire, Belmar, Casabon, Henrik, Mike Hornbeck, Torin. Like, it's a...
Yeah. Tell me about it, dude.
Dude, we can do a whole episode about that. Like, Armada, man.
Yeah. It's been... I know, I always see my, like... kind of seeing yourself as a kid and what brands you'd always want to ride for and like be a part of, and Armada's the first one for me in my head. That was like what I wanted to get on. It just I was happy where I was for a while, and I only have good things to say about Liberty. Like the family I had there forever was amazing, and the support I got from them was unbelievable. But I just felt like it was a time for a change, and they were open to it, which was super fortunate. And yeah, hopefully a lot of cool things to come in the future out of it. I'm pretty excited to get some projects going, and just be a part of this team is an honor in itself. So mm-hmm. Pretty hyped.
I did an episode with Keegan Kilbride last season.
Oh, sick.
And I thought it was funny because in his movie, he was riding like all Armada models.
Yeah.
Like he didn't have one. Like he was riding the White Walkers in the park.
No way.
Which I thought was odd, but he said they were fun. So are we going to see some White Walkers in the slope run?
I doubt it, man. I don't know if I can flip those things fast enough, man.
Have you had a chance to try out different models? Like what's your go-to?
Dude. Honestly, I've only ridden one ski ever from Armada, and it was the one I was on recently, the ARV 96 with like the bear on it. That's honey. It's like
those graphics are really nice.
Super sick, man. That's the sickest. And that's the only ski I've tried out so far. I've been on them for the spring and then the summer and then into New Zealand, the trip I just got back from. So yeah, on those for now. And I really like them. Like they're a wider ski than I'm used to, but just an unbelievable flex pattern in the tip and tail, and like how they respond to what I want to do and how they like handle in like not as great snow is just like unbelievable. So it's a definitely new world.
How wide are they?
They're 96 underfoot, and I think like I don't know what in the tip and tail, I'd have to look, but they're not symmetrical. Yeah. But they're like,
but and what were what width were those you were riding with before?
I think they're 88 underfoot.
Okay,
but not much different underfoot to the to the shovel of the nose. Like they're quite a skinny park ski and quite stiff. which was great for jumping and landing big.
So how is it for you that have been riding that ski for years and years to switch to something? Is it, are you someone that notices those details or?
Oh yeah. Yeah, of course. You know, you're noticing a ton, but it was super fun to get used to because I didn't have to do it. Like I didn't have to compete on them right away. You know, I had Whistler in the spring and had like a few, like a month and a half of just riding them just to get used to them, going out in the park and cruising, not like no stress skiing, you know, which was super sick. And I got used to the more weight and a bit wider and stuff. And it was like something I really loved. But there's a little smaller version of that ski, the 86, that is a wider shovel, but same sort of concept. And that one I just got sent. So I'm going to be trying that one out in the next few weeks. So another new ski to try, but I got a good feeling about them.
So there's one last thing to close it off. I have a question from a patron on Patreon. Those are kind of light questions.
Yeah.
Will Cameron asks, who has the best hair in skiing?
The best hair in skiing? Damn. It's a good question.
Who could be like the next Glenn Plake, you know?
Yeah. Well, obviously, we remember Henrik's dread phase. You know, that era of Henrik was like...
Yeah. Pretty, I guess that's pretty glorious.
Yeah, pretty glorious. But that's, you know, he right now, he's like, he's got hair as short as mine. So like present day hair, damn, that's a good question. I gotta think about that.
I think Parker White with his his mullets is
Parker,
good.
Parker White with his mullets, pretty sick. A-Hall had some when he had long hair. It was pretty epic. Like it was pretty pretty funny. My teammate Mark, this is like, I don't know if it's as public, but my teammate Mark, one night we shaved his head into a bowl cut and he kept it for a few weeks. And man, it was so funny. Like he would go skiing, it would be normal. You'd be under a hat and then he would take it off and it would be this insane bowl cut. Like just walking around the ski resort, like looking hilarious. And Kim Boberg has the bowl cut too. You know, he's got a pretty sick bowl cut that he's rocked in the past, and I've seen some good footage of that. So I'd say he takes it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And then other question from Will also. Any slush drama that you want to share?
Slush drama.
Or not drama, but like fun stories slush-wise?
Slush stories, yeah. Dude, where can I start? There's so many. The last slush cup in Andorra, I was rooming with Hunter Hess, and I have like such a bad immune system and I always get sick, and like I got pretty sick during the last few days of the event, and I was like having a tough time sleeping. Hunter is like the craziest snorer. Like he snores, like I swear it could like blow down a brick house, man. It's so loud. It's insane. So I was like pretty sick and was like, Hunter, can you please like go to another room or something? And then I just ended up taking my mattress and slept in like Finn and Mark's room because they were, you know, because I was trying to just be able to sleep. And then I ended up getting Mark really sick and it was just like a whole big ordeal. I guess that's not really funny, but like Hunter snoring was always a pretty big factor for me rooming with him. But I don't know if there's any drama really. Like it's all just homies having fun times. Like I don't know, we did a trip after one slush cup to Barcelona for a few nights and went skating, and like that crew on the beaches of Barcelona is pretty dangerous. Like they're weapons, man.
And who was that crew?
I remember it being like Lasser, Joss, Jake Carney, Napes, and like I stayed with like Jonah Williams and a bunch of people. It was like an older one, but it was sick. It was so fun. We went like skating around Barcelona and like saw some old skate spots like Macba and like the legendary ones in Barcy, and that was pretty sick.
That's pretty sick for you as a skater, like Barcelona is one of the top spots in the world as a skater.
Yeah, so insane.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on, Max.
Yeah, dude.
Congrats on everything, and I hope the season goes well for you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for having me on. I hope I wasn't ranting too much or, you know, dragging on stories.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. Thanks a lot. So this is it for episode 35 with Max Moffat. It was really good chatting with him. He gave a lot of amazing insights, so I thank him for that. Thanks to the patrons once again, and thanks to the sponsors, Planks Clothing, Axis Board Shop, and Dick Ann's Restaurants. Peace.